Hey everybody, this is a re-recording of the original intro that was on this episode. I'm replacing the file as there's been some changes, and I feel like anybody who's tuning in for the first time, the original intro didn't quite apply the same way. When I started this podcast, I never really thought that something like this would be part of the equation, but John, this week's guest, actually, he passed away just a few days after the episode dropped. We talked about it in the episode a little bit. He struggled with Crohn's for a long time with his life, which we did talk about, and then we also touched on he was diagnosed with cancer, and he came on the show after his second diagnosis. And we originally had some other things planned for the episode, but he was placed in hospice care, and so we fast-tracked it. I leapfrogged this episode to come up a few weeks as our plans weren't going to work out the way we had originally intended. And I just got the news that he did pass away, and so yeah, it's kind of a sad episode. I got to say that. I mean, as you can hear, he's a really awesome guy and very optimistic, and you know, I don't know what else to say. He was a great dude. I was really glad that I got a chance to meet him and talk to him for that brief time, and you know, it was nice to have his positivity in my life, you know, even though it was for just a brief time. All that said, one thing that hasn't changed in the last few days would be the situation with the medical bills. As you can imagine, that stuff isn't cheap, especially considering the level of treatment he had to go through. So the family has a GoFundMe set up, and if you have the ability at all to contribute to that, the link is in the show notes. It's easy to find, and I know they'd be really appreciative of anything that you could do, and if you could share it, get it out there. I know they would really, really appreciate it, and I feel like it's an opportunity for us as a community to kind of gather around and help out some of our own. So if that is at all within your ability, please do check that out. And yeah, I don't really know what else to say. I think you're going to enjoy this episode. It'll give you a chance to see what kind of guy John really was. And yeah, be thinking of him and his family throughout this ordeal. So without further ado, here is John Schold of Sinusoid. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Tone Mob Podcast, the show about guitar tone and the people behind it. I'm your host, Blake Weiland, and with me today, I have John Schold from the legendary Sinusoid. What's happening?
Hey, not much.
Just hanging out, doing a little podcasting like any other normal person does every day, right?
Yeah, totally. You know, that's, 9 to 5. What's that?
Yeah, well, I mean, it used to be a weird thing, but I've been doing it for a while now, so it is now just feels like, I guess this is just what everyone does, right? This isn't completely normal. You talk to people on the internet, and then other people on the internet tune in. That's totally normal. Yeah. Nothing weird about that at all.
You're just in your house alone all day talking to internet friends. Yeah.
Internet friends, yeah, that's healthy for you. It's good for you, I'm told. So how's things up there? Things pretty nice up there. We're about to go into apparently summertime down here tomorrow.
Oh yeah, we've actually had some decent weather. It's crazy how fast, like only a couple months ago we were having snow, and now we're like hitting almost 80s. Yeah, which for Washington this time of year is awesome.
It's kind of nuts. I mean, we're just south of you down here, but yeah, I guess it's supposed to be over 80. Like I heard 86, and then my wife just told me, I think it's going to be hotter tomorrow. I'm like, I'm not prepared for this. My body is not acclimated to accept these kind of temperatures as of yet, but I guess I don't really have a choice, do I?
No. I love the heat, so I am excited for this. I'm always so cold. So
Are you from around here?
Yeah, I born and raised in Washington. So
Oh, okay.
I'm just too skinny for this area, I think. Don't have enough body fat on to give me a nice insulation when it gets cold.
We've got a nice enough selection of restaurants around here. I shouldn't think that would be a problem, but you know, if you need some guidance, we can point you in the right direction of ways to get fat for sure.
Oh yeah.
So maybe let's just kind of start from the beginning. You know, tell me about yourself and how you ended up, you know, working at Sinusoid and what, you know, what kind of led you on your musical journey, so to speak.
Yeah, man, how I ended up at Sinusoid, it actually has to do a lot with my medical situation in life. Otherwise, I never would have ended up there. I was diagnosed with Crohn's disease when I was in middle school, so about 12 years old. And then a year and a half ago, so November of 2017, I was diagnosed with cancer. And so Sinusoid, I ended up having a friend from college that knew the guys there. And then also Isaiah Dominguez, who is one of their artists. He was actually a buddy of mine in high school. We were in a band together for a long time, in his wedding. And so I had like a couple random connections to them, and they were looking for some part-time help. And while I was on chemo, that was about all I could do. And they're super, super awesome, just working with my schedule and everything, going through that. And so I pretty much ended up at Sinusoid because I was looking for some part-time work while I was going through chemo. So yeah, if I had never gotten sick, never would have ended up there. So weird kind of, you know, silver lining type of thing, but
right,
yeah.
Well, you landed it with a great bunch of dudes. I don't know how involved were you in kind of like the gear world and the gear community and all that before you landed there. What was your experience with all that?
Yeah, so I grew up. I've grown up playing in the church. So guitar wise, I also grew up a drummer. My dad was a guitarist, so I've always played. But I didn't really get like serious about it until, I started having friends with nice guitar gear at church. And I was like, oh, guitar looks fun because you have toys. so when because my experience with electric guitars was, the pop punk band I was in, and it was, you plug straight into the amp. And I remember the first time, our guitarist got a delay pedal, and it was like this game changing moment, and it was like one pedal. So that was my experience before college. It was like, oh, you know, electric, you just plug into an amp. But once I started getting around the church people with their big boards, I like to mess with things. So the pedal board part of guitaring drew me in to play more.
That's pretty interesting. You know, a lot of people think maybe some, you know, I guess you would call them sort of snobbish people. They're the straight in, which I think is less and less common these days. You know, you got to plug straight in or you can't get the tones, man.
Yeah.
I don't think that's as common as it used to be.
And that's the thing is, like, I just get bored with the same sound. So, like, if I'm not able to change stuff a lot, and I know an amp, you can, you know, a good amp, you can get a lot of different voicings out of, but I just love messing with stuff and having the ability to do something. Like, even if I'm never going to do it, it's nice to, like, but then I listen to people like Derek Trucks, who just plugs an SG into a, I think he plays a Princeton. and it's just like one of the best guitar tones I've ever heard. And I'm like, I could listen to this forever and it would never get old. So then I'm like, well, if I was better, I probably wouldn't like effects as much. So I think it comes back to that.
Maybe. I don't know. I feel like once you give somebody like that, once they break into the world of effects and find all the weird colors and different palettes you can explore, then it's just like, it's that much better. I mean, it's always good to have more skill, right? Derek Trucks is insane, but
yeah,
I mean, you know, that coupled with having all the wonderful tools that we have at our disposal, I feel like is kind of the 1-2 punch for this stuff.
Yeah, especially like I think lately, like one of my favorite styles play wise and listening to just like super big ambient rock, like Explosions in the Sky type of stuff. And it's just like, man, the effects just create so much space. And it's just like, oh, it's amazing. So yeah, I guess you can't lean. And I mean, that's the, you know, easy way out. You just be in the middle. The right things for the right application, right?
Right. Always. Every time. The right tool for the right job, so to speak.
Or like if all you've gotten is an amp, I know plenty of churches that guitar shows up and it's just plug into the amp. And so I've actually done a lot of work trying to help people sound good and fill space, even if they're just plugging straight into an amp, because you can still do it.
Oh, definitely.
You know? So that's always interesting, is kind of helping people play different because of to fit the equipment almost sometimes.
Yeah, in situations where I've had like a little more limited access to things and I'm trying to sort of fill out the space by myself or, you know, replicate some of that more ambient stuff, I find myself kind of playing a lot more open strings and letting them kind of drone while I'm playing underneath of them. And I don't know if there's other techniques that you found to try to kind of mimic some of that feel. You can never totally replicate a good reverb with just your fingers, but just have you found some techniques that maybe helped or made it easier?
Yeah. One of the things I love to do when I'm like, say I'm leading worship from electric, I love using cut capos as much as I can in that scenario, because the picking, like if I'm able to just pick some open chords, because there's so many more open strings you're getting, I feel like it helps create a ton of space. So like open tunings too, you know, going down to dadgad or something, which a cut capo is essentially with different chording fingerings. But that idea of, yeah, getting those open strings, exactly. And cut capos are, I love them. So
I've really never played with one. I've seen them, but I've just have the old classic pinch on straight bar style. I've never messed with one of those capos before.
Yeah, if you have a Kaiser capo, which is like it has like the fancy curl at the top. But those ones, if you have like a normal six string Kaiser capo, you can turn it around and use it as a cut capo backwards most of the time. And so it's kind of fun to mess around with, pretty much what it's doing. If you're using it on capo 2, you're pretty much getting an open E tuning, the same as dadgad, but just an E.
Interesting.
And so, okay. Yeah. And then the weird thing, though, you have to wrap your mind around sometimes is if you play in dadgad, so you know your fingerings for chords, because it's a capo and three of the strings are now two frets off from what dadgad would be, you have to change a lot of your chordings. And it I remember the first time I couldn't wrap my head around why it wasn't working, and then I realized, oh, the strings are not in the same place, so frets are going to be one of those moments I felt not very smart, but...
I have that almost, you know, 5 to 9 times a day, so don't feel too bad about that. It's okay. Perfectly normal thing. I'm sitting here going, wow, you know what? I've seen these before, but I've never really messed with them. And now I'm very curious, and we'll probably be hitting up Amazon later to figure out, or actually, where I should be going, Amazon, how silly of me, should be going to tonemob.com/reverb for all of my gear acquisition needs. How silly of me to even suggest. Yeah, forget you, Jeff Bezos. You're good enough. Not to bash on a fellow Washingtonian or anything. I don't know how serious you guys are about Jeff up there.
Honestly, the convenience of Amazon, I'm never going to complain about, but I hate how big Seattle's getting. So I'm not the biggest fan of cities when they're crazy tech company overridden.
Yeah, Seattle's nuts. I mean, Portland's grown a lot, but we don't have those big tech drivers like you guys do. And
yeah.
And just the way your city is kind of positioned, you know, it doesn't have as much room to expand. It can only kind of go a few different ways because you're butted up against the bay there.
And the water on the other side.
Right. There's nowhere for it to go but like up. And it's already pretty up. Have you guys up there like experienced anything good other than the obvious job flow or job that comes into the area and all that stuff? Has there been any benefits? Because every time I go up to Seattle, I'm like, geez, there's so many cars. What do we do?
Yeah, and it's crazy too. Being in NAMM in LA, that was my first time in LA, and like realizing how small the traffic is. Like Seattle traffic is bad, and I know like Portland traffic is terrible, but seeing a place like LA, and you're like, oh well, at least it's not this.
Yeah, for sure.
But I mean, it's funny too because I'm a computer science major, so like I should love the tech boom or whatever. But
right.
I think the one nice thing is it's making a lot of new, like there's a lot of new stuff. So as somebody who has frequented many, many public restrooms, it's always nice when buildings and stuff are new and you get like a nice bathroom. And that's a very random way to look at it, but like just going to a restaurant when it's a newer, you know, like just new stuff is nice. So.
Especially in a bathroom and especially in a public bathroom, the newer, the better. Everything's just easier to clean and you just feel a little more at ease with the task at hand.
Yep. 100%.
So you mentioned that you became drawn to the guitar because of all the toys and the pedals associated with it. So what was your first rig like?
So my first electric that I bought myself that was like a not like a starter guitar. First electric was a used Tele off of Guitar Center, and then. I remember I have a picture on my Instagram somewhere and I bought a full drive 2 off a buddy of mine. I had a Polytune Knorr, the black one. Mm-hmm. And then I had like an old Boss compressor my dad had, and a DD20.
Ooh,
I think that was like the first couple. Yeah. And like, and then I was playing through my dad's old Mesa Boogie, which he then had lined through, a an old like 70s Music Man 4x10.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, like just a really beefy combo.
Yeah, that's gnarly.
That, you know, I'm playing at like one and then, you know, never actually played it anywhere. But then my first amp in that world was a, I got, oh man, I found a killer Craigslist deal for, it was a Vox AC4 head with a, with an Epiphone Valve Junior cab, and it was $150 for the pair of them.
Ooh, that is screaming.
Yeah, and it was like pristine condition. Like it was just this random guy in Olympia, and I remember I wasn't even looking to buy an amp, but I saw it on Craigslist, and I was like, "Holy crap, this is too cheap to pass up!" Like I was with a buddy of mine, and I was like, "Hey, can we go pick this up right now? Because this is not going to last." Played that for a while. So yeah, like a Mexi Tele, full drive 2 DD20, and my dad's old Mesa and Music Man combo. Yeah, and you know, a DD20, there's just so much you can do with it, and it's not even crazy. And so like that lasted for a while. I think I added a Pog Mini next. I had a guy I knew in the Olympia area. It was when I was living in Olympia, Washington. I had him build me a custom a Timmy and a Little Green Wonder clone. And I had some like Lord of the Rings artwork I printed and put on it.
Oh, nice.
And I think that's the only pedal I have from like my initial kind of foray into the
first rig type. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's the only thing that's left from that first rig. I got really lucky. I had a second job like right when I was starting to get in the guitar. I got like a random second job putting decals on promotional hockey sticks. Super random, okay. But I got paid under the table, and I had like this random side income under the table that was like, oh, I can just throw money at gear that has no other purpose. And so
right
updating, and that was probably like the bulk of the first like, oh, let's, you know, fill out the board. And then ended up building my own pedal board, which went way better than it should have for a first time thing.
Right.
Like me and my dad did it, and then a buddy of mine like rounded the edges for us because we didn't have a router. But then I like Tolexed it, and it worked. Way I was like, oh, I got super lucky because this Tolex doesn't look terrible. you know, one of those things where you're like, well, I can watch as many YouTube videos as I want, but push comes to shove, when you actually apply it, you never know. So,
oh, totally. Tolex is a weird thing to work with too. If you've never, I've only worked with it like twice, and it was amazing at what you could do with it. It's like if you practice a little bit, it's like, oh, I can hide that seam. Like, how?
Yeah,
wow.
If you work it. Yeah, so I think there's like maybe a 16th of an inch or like a 32nd of an inch where I had cut it too short, and so like there's technically a slit on the side of the board, but I was like, well, it's not super noticeable. But the rounded edges, I realized later. Yeah, and I was originally going to pipe it, and then I got lazy. And I found a suitcase that it fit in perfectly, and I was like, I'm just going to let this be a living board now.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Which, it just makes things easy, and it's a pain in the butt to get out of the suitcase, because it was literally like, I don't know how it happened, but I built the board, And then months later, an old bandmate of mine was like, oh, hey, you should see if your board fits in that old suitcase we used to haul our cables in. And I had to pull out like the, it's in like an old, you know, 50s hard vintage suitcase or whatever. And I had to pull out the lining, but the board fit like it was like I had had those dimensions in my head from, you know, high school or something, because for some reason I built the board and it fit corner to corner perfectly in the suitcase. And I was like, this should not be a thing at all.
It was custom, but it was custom made. You just didn't know it.
I was like, no way it's going to fit. And then like I held it up to it and I was like, oh, if I take out these, like this lining and the screws or whatever, or the pins or whatever we're holding in, I was like, it might actually fit. And then I put it in and I was like, well, it's not going to come out easy. So I guess we'll just leave it in. So I had to take off the hinges for the suitcase. And now I have two belts with the clasps because there's no other way to close it.
Oh, right.
But, yeah, because I tried to find like hinges that were hatchable, like separatable, but for some reason it was way harder to find than I thought. So I just ended up keeping it as a living.
Yeah,
with the belt,
fine. It'll look it's classy that way. You know, it's like a traveling guitarsman with his old vintage suitcase full of fancy pedals and whatnot.
Yeah, I feel so hipster sometimes, and I'm like, it's not. It just worked out. Don't assume that I'm, you know, super hipster guitarist because
just
of my
suitcase.
Just
admit it, John. It's okay.
Board.
It's okay.
We're in the PNW, everyone. I guess. Yeah, I'm like default at least 25% hipster, I think.
I've come to accept it. You know, I find myself occasionally sipping some single source coffee at a record shop, and I'm like, you know what? I'm a hipster, and so I guess I am. That's fine. I guess I just have to accept it and just go with it.
I think my love of cardigans and scarves too. It's just like, well, okay. I guess I'm part of that family.
There's such a wide variety of hipsters. And if you go, I think there's even a book about it.
I mean, a Portland hipster versus a Seattle hipster. I mean, similar compared to the rest of the country, but even then, very different.
I don't know. Maybe I haven't spent enough time analyzing the Seattle hipster. What would you say the differences are?
I would think the Seattle hipster is going to be, and maybe I don't know Portland enough, but Portland to me seems chiller. I think a Seattle hipster is going to be way more uptight and snobby, and your Portland hipster is going to be a lot more chill and agreeable.
I can say that you're probably right about that, but I can't base it upon a hipster comparison. I have to base it upon my interactions with the homeless population of both cities.
Okay.
For the most part, the homeless population in Portland is pretty low key for the most part. They kind of leave people alone. But whenever I go to Seattle, I feel like I'm being shook down. They're like, "Hey, man!" Like I had a guy following me around after like for like 5 minutes. Like, "Hey, man, can you spare some?" I'm like, "I don't have any cash." Like, well, if you could, you just go in this ATM and get this out. I'm like, no, like you're starting to make this really weird. Like, and I've had that happen a couple times in Seattle. So if the homeless or hipster kind of thing crosses over, then maybe there's some truth to that nugget.
Seattle just has a snobbiness that comes across in a lot of people. And I think it's part of the tech thing. But I think it's also like, I feel like there's this weird, like, Seattle's like one of the big cities, you know, like when people ask where you're from, you're like, oh, Seattle, if they don't know Washington. But it's not like a really big city. Like, it's almost, I feel like Seattle is like, oh yeah, like we'll group Seattle in because it's the biggest in Washington or whatever. But it's not like an LA or a Houston or something. And so I feel like it has like this, like, well, we're better than you because of all this other stuff, even though we're not an actual big city. I don't know. It's weird. Like, I feel like Seattle's trying to prove itself sometimes.
It's almost got like a little man syndrome if it were a city.
Exactly. Yeah. Seattle would definitely drive a lifted 4x4 F-350.
With big rims and big tires.
Big rims and like just the biggest like gun rack and like the huge like, yeah.
I remember Seattle were a city, it's the lifted F-350 of cities.
My band director in high school was this short, he was probably 5'6" maybe. And he drove this
so short
huge
and small.
Truck.
It's so tiny. I can't believe humans even are that short. Wait a minute.
Well, he might have been even smaller than that, actually. Like, anyway, he drove this huge truck that was just so disproportionate to him. And he was actually, he ended up getting arrested.
Oh, whoa. This took a turn.
Yeah, sophomore year of high school, we left for spring break and then we came back and we had a sub. And then a week later, our band director was in the front page of the newspaper after like a sting operation in Idaho at like a Boy Scout
Whoa.
Camp. And it's just like, oh, okay. Well, and then our new band director was awesome. So we got lucky. And as like
the
kid, well, and I was like in high school, I was like super tiny. Freshman year, I was 4'10". I was just the small kid. And, I was like just about to start taking lessons with him, like private lessons after school with him. And I was like, oh, well, dodged a bullet. Like, I already looked way younger than a high schooler should. And, yeah, not the best sophomore year for band, but.
No, that's really rough. If it makes you feel any better, I have a somewhat similar experience where I had not from my piano teacher, but my piano teacher when I was a kid rented a room out from this guy, just for a very brief period of time. This guy had this piano shop, and it was like a piano shop. It was a big old building, like piano shop downstairs, like apartments upstairs type of thing.
Okay,
and
yeah.
That guy got arrested, the guy who owned the place, he got arrested later because he had done a big renovation on that building and he had people living there and stuff. Well, that dude was crawling in the walls and had like holes cut in the, you know, like seriously, like out of Psycho. Like he was crawling in the walls and like looking at his tenants and stuff. It was super, super creepy.
Terrifying.
Yeah, he super went to prison. Once that got, I'd only been there like a couple times, but like after a while it was like, what happened to the music shop? Like, oh yeah, the guy was mega creep and was crawling in the walls and looking at his tendons. It's like, oh wow, that's some dedication. Cause he went through a full like renovation to make that happen. It was a intense renovation cause I was there when they were doing it. It was a full gut of that building and with some custom modifications apparently.
It just makes
weird
me think
people
of,
in this world.
Are you a Bob's Burgers fan at all?
I've watched it a few times. Yeah, it's a good show.
There's just the crawl spaces, and that's what it's making me think of.
Yeah, it's
so if there's
it's
any Bob's
like
Burgers
that,
fans.
Think.
Yeah,
I think this was before Bob's Burgers was a thing, so I don't even know if we can give him a pass there. But I do think when I picture it in my head, yeah, it is kind of similar to that.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, oh, that's just weird. I had a,
it's
I lived
of,
with
it's
a guy
making
once,
my skin crawl. I wish I hadn't brought it up.
I lived with a guy once in a duplex and they were like, the houses were back to back instead of side to side. And we were like 99% sure these people were doing drugs of some sort in their, like, cooking or something.
Oh, right.
It was just, like, this guy was just seemed drugged out all the time. It was when the iPhone 5S was coming out, but my roommate, the guy I was living with, had ordered it. And we get a knock at the door, and the guy that lived in the other side of the duplex, like, had this open iPhone box. He's like, "Hey, I think this is yours. I ordered the same one, so I thought it was mine, and I opened it." And we were like,
"What?
Thanks?"
Huh?
And it was like, obviously not his name on the box. He had tried to activate the phone, I'm pretty sure, and realized that, like, it was already synced to my buddy's account. So he, like, right, couldn't use it. And we were like, okay, it just always felt weird. Turns out they were cooking meth in there, and they, like, had to, like, strip down the entire inside of that apartment side and, like, redo the entire house because they had been cooking meth in this. I was like, oh, sweet. I lived on the other side of that wall. Who knows?
It's good for me. It's good for my health. This is wonderful. You know, I've heard, and I don't know if it's true. When I was a kid, I worked for a painter for a while, and that was one of the things we had to do, was we redid a former meth lab, like, repainted everything and basically restored it. I didn't have to do any of, like, the serious cleanup, so it was pretty it was fairly clean by the time I got there. But, like, I was told that I don't know if this is true, but I was told recently that in Oregon, it, to a certain degree, if there's been meth cooked in it, like, you can't even do that anymore. It's like a teardown situation. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's what I was told.
I wouldn't be surprised. If it gets
to a certain point.
Like, it seems so sketch. And I haven't watched all of Breaking Bad, so I don't even know the meth cooking situation. But, like, it just seems like it would not be healthy to leave stuff. Like, it just seems so intense. When I think about meth and cooking meth, it just seems like a very intense process.
I think it probably is. I think it's, from what I gather, it's fairly simple, but it's also, like, extremely toxic. But I think once you're, like, at that point, I guess it doesn't really matter to those people. It's a terrible thing. Don't do drugs, kids. Come on. It's bad.
Yeah,
get it
seriously,
together.
People.
Get it together.
Don't do them.
Don't do them. It's bad. Yeah, you'll end up with a refrigerator on your head, just like that guy in Breaking Bad. Oh, I don't know if you got,
like,
to that
dissolved
point
in a bathtub. Didn't
That's
they do
right.
that to one guy?
They did. They totally dissolved a guy in a bathtub. And they used the wrong chemical.
Yeah, or he used the wrong... He didn't get the right bucket from the store. Wasn't it like he had
That's
to get a certain
right.
type of plastic? And then he was like, "I'm Jesse, I don't care what you say." And then, like, it dissolved through the bathtub and the, like, floor. Because it was on the second floor. So, like, dead body juice just, like, poured through the floor.
It was kind of an amazing episode, if I'm being honest. That show was pretty great.
I think I got through season 2, maybe. And it didn't hook me as much as I was expecting it to. But, like, I'm like a fantasy guy, so not quite my perfect wheelhouse of show.
So, yeah, you're going to be on the Game of Thrones train then.
Oh man. Yes.
Before we get into it, I should say I should be. I'm a big Tolkien fan. I'm a big fantasy guy. I like playing D&D and all that stuff. But for some reason, I just haven't been. I think I got through season 1 of Game of Thrones, and it was like, why isn't this grabbing me the way I thought it would? And I think it's because I waited so long, and everyone was like, "You're gonna love it. You're gonna love it. You're gonna love it." And
yeah, that's
I just got overhyped on it, I think.
Yeah, and it's crazy because, especially nowadays, with how big it's gotten, like, it's weird to think when it first came out that it wasn't like this huge thing. Like, you look back at season 1, And like, it's a very different production quality. It's HBO, so it's still pretty high, but like, it's crazy how big it got. And like, as somebody who's read the books too, it's really interesting to see that now there's going to be all these people that are like the Game of Thrones show fans. And like, I feel like the books, if he never finishes them, like, are going to fall away and like be forgotten because of how big. I mean, if he doesn't finish them, I think they'll never be as big as the show. If he finishes them, it's going to be super interesting because it's going to be different than what the show did story-wise. Right. And so I just like, I feel bad that they finished the series before he finished the books, because now he has the pressure of, well, this is what people are expecting, and it's always going to be compared to the show. Whereas most everything that's a show based on a book, everything's already been written. So if you deviate from it, it's always getting compared to the book. But now his books are going to be compared to the show, which people are like freaking out about this last season. And I feel like complaining so much, but I don't get it. I'm super easily entertained though. Like, I rarely walk into a movie and think that was a terrible movie. Like, I'm just like, oh yeah, like that was good. I'm not a movie critic at all.
Yeah, I'm a little bit both ways. I it's kind of a mood thing for me. You know, if somebody's okay. If I'm like, okay, I'm gonna go watch this what is supposed to be a really excellent film, then I kind of have my movie critic hat on to a degree. But if I'm like, I'm gonna go watch this new, you know, Seth Rogen movie, like, all right, it'll be fun. You know, I'm not gonna worry about it too much. Or even, you know, a Marvel movie, which I love Marvel and superheroes and all that. But even that, I can like, okay, yeah, guys are gonna be flying, they're gonna be in tights, so I gotta already just kind of go in with that and yeah, go from there.
Yeah, I think the only movies that I have like felt like a critic and really not enjoyed was probably the last Hobbit movie. I was just like, I remember just being feeling so let down, because like the first one after Lord of the Rings, I mean, I grew up on the original trilogy. Like, I would fall asleep almost every night of high school. I just put them on, put the commentaries on, like all the special features, you know, extended everything. I was like, I just would fall asleep to that stuff almost every night of high school. And so like when The Hobbit was coming out, I was so, so excited and ready. And like the first one, I remember just having a smile on my face like the entire movie. And then like the second and third ones, man, I was just like, one of the only times I felt extremely let down from the movie. But besides that, I think it's because I cared about, like, I loved the world and the book and everything so much. So, which most movies I have no real attachment to.
Yeah. Yeah, I could totally see that. I was the same way. I'm a big fan of all that stuff. I didn't quite go to the extreme that you did with watching things late into the night, but I was obviously a big fan. I read the books, way before the movies came out, and I saw them, you know, I was deep in all that stuff. And I similarly had almost the exact same experience you did with The Hobbit. I was like, oh, this is going to be so awesome, because The Hobbit personally was always one of my favorite Tolkien books. And maybe it's because it's the first one I read, but regardless. And so I had the same experience. I walked in, I was like, the first one was great. And then the second and third, I was like, oh, like, I wasn't like totally bummed, because there was definitely some redeeming qualities about it. But yeah, I got done, like, and I was like, well, that wasn't what I wanted exactly.
It's like, it's visually entertaining to watch, but when you know The Hobbit, I was just like, oh, this is, it didn't feel like The Hobbit I knew. And so,
no,
like, I feel like there's too much added in and changed. And I knew they were going to do that. They're like, oh, we have work from the appendices that we're going to be adding in. But there's so much stuff that was added in that wasn't like lore that I was just like, oh, okay. Elf, dwarf, okay. Worms that burrow through the ground. Like, was that really necessary?
I'm not really sure about that. Seems a little out there.
I think that was one of the biggest like WTF moments I've had in the movie. Like, those worms popped out of the ground and I was just like, what?
Like, what are these? Yeah.
Like, I was so confused. And I think that was like the final straw for me. I was just like, okay, this is not what I wanted. I'm not going to have some last minute redeem at the end.
No, it's too late. It's already too far gone.
But what's so nice is that...
Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, to get us a little bit back on the gear train, yeah. I don't know. this does connect a little bit. But
there you go. All right.
Yeah, I don't know if you've ever seen Ed Chu, and I've talked about this on multiple episodes lately. It's become my go-to drive pedal for, quite a while. The Wrought Iron Effects Orchrist Overdrive. I don't know if you've seen that or not.
Yes.
It's right up your alley.
I was super tempted I redid my drive section. When was this? Right before the new year, I think. And I was extremely tempted to try and base all of my drive section off of mythical stuff. And so I have the Tumless Deluxe because I was like, it's a solid clone and it has Tumness on it. I was like, even if I'm also not a super audiophile, so I'm like, man, if I have a clone style, like, there's not a lot that I'm looking for specifically in it. And so the Orchrist was another one I was looking at. I was thinking about trying to do. It is Wrought Iron Effects. They also have an Aslan pedal.
Yes. Different overdrive. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I was like, man, it'd be so awesome to have, because then that custom dual overdrive I have, it has the image of Smaug over the Lonely Mountain from the map in The Hobbit. I got that.
Oh, nice.
And I like put that on as the decal. So I call it the Lonely Mountain Overdrive. And I was like, man, if I could just have an entire like fantasy drive section. But I didn't go with that. So.
What'd you end up going with?
What do I have right now? I've got I've got the Tumness Deluxe, I love. I've got the 1981, which, I mean, I'm assuming everybody on your podcast has heard of it already, but seriously, guys, that thing, it's amazing. It's my favorite drive pedal I've ever heard. And I actually got it as a wedding present from a buddy in Nashville. That knows
Matt. Nice.
He was like, hey, I got one of these, but he's a pedal builder out there, actually, AWOL Pedals.
Oh, yeah, I've met him before.
Yeah, so Aaron Wall, I went to school with him, actually, I remember we were super close when he started building pedals for the first time, and so, like, his little one-bedroom apartment, his entire kitchen table area was just always a mess with pedal building stuff. But he got me that 1981 pedal. Awesome stuff. Guys, go check out AWOL Pedals as a plug there. And then I've got I've got a Steak and Egg. So I have the Morning Glory. Honestly, I have too much drive because I was originally just going to do the Steak and Eggs, the 1981, and the Tumness. But I couldn't get rid of that Lonely Mountain Overdrive. It was like, my first custom boutique pedal. And so I just like threw it on the board, and I'm like, I have five drives on my board right now that are all different enough that I can use them differently, but it just feels like super overkill. But it's more so it's like, well, I have the space, so I might as well just put this pedal I have on.
If you got the space and you don't have anything else you're trying or that's trying to fill it, you might as well.
Yeah, so and I don't have a boost right now, so pretty much the Little Green Wonder I use primarily as just a boost, picking up lead line and stuff. So kind of like one of them's a boost instead of a drive, but you know, what's the real difference between those anyway? But yeah, so that's the drive section I have right now. So it's got 50% fantasy stuff on it.
And then how does it, what's the rest of the chain look like?
So after that, we've got so steak and eggs into that, into that, into that. So then going to a Pog 2, and then volume pedal, which was a modded BP Junior by AWOL Pedals, actually. So another plug there.
Oh,
And
what
then
did he do
after
to it?
that, what was that?
What did he do to it?
So it's a tone buffer mod. So it has the buffered dual output for the tuner.
Okay.
And yeah, so you know, kind of standard BP Junior mod.
Yeah.
So then out of that, we're going into a Matthews Effects special edition chemist. So it's the chemist with the backwards three. And so it's a blackout pedal he did where he switched out the phaser for a chorus vibe or treble. Trem,
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
because it has the chorus vibe, octaves, and trem. And I was looking for like an octave or a trem or a chorus vibe something. And then Rick announced he was doing this pedal that was going to have a trem in it and the chorus vibe as a special edition. And I jumped on that to kind of fill both of those things at the same time. So then we go that into a. Shoot, I always forget the name. It's the. Wow. The Moleko Echo.
Oh, the 616?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I forgot
into
about
the
those. Those are great.
Yeah, I had a carbon copy first, and I hated the mod settings on the inside of the pedal. I wanted to be able to tweak those way easier. So, fun weird random fact: I sold it on Craigslist up here, and the guy that bought it was like one of the sound guys at Xbox that did like the Halo soundtracks and stuff. Like he worked on, and he was like, "Yeah, I'm buying this to use in the studio recording for Xbox titles." And I was like, "Oh shit!" Like you know, a little bit of a like, "Oh, I just met somebody that's like legit,
Like,
out of the
yeah,
blue."
he's gonna do something with this.
Yeah, like, oh, my little carbon copy is probably on, maybe on something.
It's a, Master Chief, you know, it's got his a slapback on his foot stomps or something. I don't know.
Yeah. And then so out of the Moleko Echo and then into a timeline into a Big Sky.
Oh, there you go.
So and then I have like a little input buffer. And then two foot controllers for the timeline in the Big Sky, one from AWOL pedals again, and then another Analog Endeavors. But yeah, so that's my chain right
That's
now.
the board. That's a pretty solid setup, although I gotta be honest, it's a little bit lacking in fuzz for me.
I have never been able to get on the fuzz train. And I don't know what it is, because I hear good fuzz, like that part in the Halo song, like dun, 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 dun. Like I'm like, oh, that's just a sweet fuzz, like good sounding guitar. And then whenever I play fuzz, I just don't know, think I know how to play with fuzz, because to me it just sounds like a very like dirty, unclean, untight drive, whereas I really like a crisp, clean drive sound. And so I think fuzz just is like, I think it's supposed to be something that it's not. Yeah. Although Rick Matthews has been telling me to check out the Wailer, this V2 that he's got. So that might have to be my first foray into fuzz.
The V1, I have a V1 and it's really great. Like I really liked it. I feel like it's been the Wailer I played. So now let me back up a little bit. Several years ago, Rick came down and we went to the Benson shop back when Chris was okay. Just in his garage behind his house. And this was back when Periscope first started.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I said, wouldn't it be great if we like did a live stream from Chris's shop and we like showed off all his amps and showed off all his pedals, or all your pedals. And so we all met up and we went and did this live stream thing on Periscope, and it was a disaster, because that's how all live streams are for the most part. I mean, it was, we did have a surprising amount of people that showed up to watch it. But yeah, I just have this weird memory. Anyway, the point is I played through all of Rick's pedals that day, and the one I ended up buying was the Wailer. And I think it's a very underrated fuzz, and I'm very curious how the V2 turned out.
Yeah, apparently the V2 is like a complete overhaul. Like it's a different, completely different fuzz pedal. And everything I've heard, and I played it at NAMM, but not being a fuzz guy, I didn't really know what I was looking for.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, it sounded good as far as fuzz from a not fuzz person. So now that I, and because of this, like, it's been on my mind lately of like, I need to figure out fuzz. So I think next time I get a chance playing around with it, I'll have a better appreciation for what it is.
I think I've found, for people who generally say that they like the sound of fuzz, but they can't make it work for them, I think it's a lot of, and this is just my theory, but it seems to be a lot of people that are expecting it to respond to their playing and their pick attack the way an overdrive might. Mm. And they respond completely different. And fuzz is such a wide ranging effect. I'm being very general here, but they generally just respond different. So you'll hit your note expecting, you know, if you're expecting like a nice crisp tight thing, it's going to like kind of sag more and respond just a little bit differently. And if you're prepared for that, I think you can start playing with it and figuring out how it works with everything. That would be my one suggestion for fuzz newbies.
Yeah, I think, and again, I think the number of fuzzes I've played a foot fuzz, a JHS foot fuzz, a Big Muff Pie, like one of the, my buddy has, it's a smaller version and it's like white and green. I can't remember which exact one it is.
Oh, I know what you're talking about, but I can't remember which version that is either. It's not the Deluxe. Yeah. I think it's something else.
Yeah, something similar. And then the Wailer. So again, things I've played in person, very small amount. So there's probably fuzz out there that I'm, and again, like my primary playing is usually in a worship setting, and I feel like it hasn't quite made its way into mainstream super all the time being used, and so I haven't really had a use for it yet, but I think it's getting used more and more.
One of these days, one of these guys from one of those churches is going to use a op amp Big Muff on a track, and everyone's mind's gonna break. I'm convinced of it. It'll be sounding like Smashing Pumpkins up in there.
Take it back 20 years.
Yes, I love it. So we are kind of getting down to close to the end, and I didn't mean to gloss over anything in the beginning when we were talking about your diagnosis and everything, but I did, we took a trail down the fantasy turn, and I meant to get back to it, but I was actually curious because I feel like, you know, as musicians, when we go through hard times and things that are playing and listening to this, this wonderful thing we call music can sometimes help us. Have you experienced that through, you know, what you've had to deal with?
Yeah, it's actually really funny too. So I was in middle school. So when I was first diagnosed, and at the time, I was playing music. Like I grew up playing music, but I was also I was super into soccer. I was playing like a club level soccer, and the diagnosis then, because I my Crohn's was unresponsive to pretty much every medication. I'd done like clinical trials. I'd done everything. And it was never fully in remission. But because of that, and the subsequent having to go to the bathroom, you know, anywhere from 10 to 20 times a day, wasn't really able to play sports anymore. At least at a level, high competitive level. And because of that, I ended up, I think, pressing into music a lot more, because it was something I could do usually close to a bathroom. So it's kind of funny how it was almost like a chicken and egg thing of I pressed into music because I kind of had to, or because that was the easier outlet and the more accessible. But at the same time, like the music was better for my life than playing high level sports would have ever been. And so it is kind of funny that I took that route, and it, you know, helped me. And it's funny because I was still doing, if you think about, you know, playing a set, say you have a, you know, even a 30, 45 minute set. I mean, if you have to poop in the middle of that, and in, you know, 14 years of playing with that situation, playing at church on the weekends, playing shows, there was, I think, like less than a handful of times where that timing happened, and like just while playing, because I was like, well, I'm not just going to run off in the middle of a song. And so, yeah, it's like this weird, like, even though it was still hard sometimes, the music, like, I think it's one of those things, like, people know, I think sometimes, that they're like, yeah, I'm made for music. Like, this is a big part of me. And for me, playing live is more so that I surprisingly don't listen to a lot of music. So it's not like there was a lot of like there's no songs that are like, man, in this time, this song really spoke to me or anything. I pretty much listen to music when I'm driving to and from places. And then I don't really put music on a lot other than that. And so for me, it's more the playing, and the writing parts and songs, that's more therapeutic in a sense, I guess would be the word, but helps me. Cause it's something that I'm like, man, I'm supposed to, like, this is something I'm good at. And, you know, for me, feel like I'm created to do, is to be creative in that way. And, being able to do it while being sick is huge. So I was just in the hospital, it was like, I had a guitar. Andy, from Sinusoid brought a guitar, and then I ended up getting like a little Martin backpacker, to have in the hospital room. And I didn't play nearly as much as I hoped I could have. I had so much free time that I could probably be a pretty good guitarist right now. But I mean, just being able to pick up a guitar and play in a hospital, like, it's game changing. It was like, oh, I'm still there. Like, I still have this part of me, even when everything else is like, so.
Right.
yeah, music right. definitely important in those times, I think.
Did it help you, like, just kind of, like, find a sense of purpose, sort of, in some ways? Because I feel like when you're bedridden and kind of locked down, you start to feel sort of like a drain or a weight on people. Did playing kind of help? At least it has for me in my little short stints that I've had to be down in bed or down for any time. I kind of start feeling like I'm just dragging everyone down. Does that kind of alleviate that, or did you not experience that, or how did that kind of manifest itself?
I don't know if I ever resonated with that. Maybe a little. I think my mindset was always like everybody just go on with your lives. Like, yes, I want to see people, and yes, I want people to care about me. I want to feel loved, but at the same time, like, I don't want. Yeah, I guess I don't want to be a drain around people in the sense of feeling like people have to be around or anything. Yeah, I don't know how much the music played into that, though.
Right. I mean, is it more of a distraction, or does it kind of, is it like, for me personally, it's like a almost a purpose-filling thing. Or for you, is it more just kind of a distraction?
No, definitely a purpose-filling thing. And because I didn't do it as often, it was showing more that, for me, when I would, like, pick up the guitar or something, there'd have to be a reason behind it. And so it was either, like, I had an idea writing-wise, or I had, like, a tune in my head that I, you know, wanted to get out. Or I, like, just wanted to, like, almost, like, remind myself that I could do it. And so there was always, like, it was never, like, oh, just pick up the guitar and noodle for no reason. I feel like every time I picked it up, it was, like, there's a reason. I was, like, oh, I feel like I want to get this out. So for me, that was, yeah, there's more deliberateness behind it.
Do you have any advice, or maybe just some insights that you've gained through the process that somebody who's going through something similar might be able to learn from you or take away?
Man, I don't know. It was really funny, because, like, all these things you think of when you're like, oh man, if I had free time, what would I do with all my free time? And so I was in the hospital 2.5 months, and, like, it gets to a point where there's too much free time. And so for me, it was really important to stay connected with people, and, like, look forward to things still. I know that can be really hard when, like, stuff's not going well. Like, I'm such a planner that, like, I guess I'm planning for the bad outcomes too, but, like, I'm like, man, like, if things go good, thinking about the future. And then, yeah, just, like, I would say sometimes you got to do things even when you don't want to.
Okay.
Because once you start doing it, it'll be like, oh yeah, like, no. Because when you have so much free time and you're in a situation like that, it can just be so lethargic and apathetic, and, like, I just don't want to do anything. So, like, sometimes pushing yourself to do something when you otherwise don't want to can really help.
So I think I think that last part you just said is kind of in not in every facet, but in many areas of life, I feel like that is the answer. Sometimes just digging in and getting your hands dirty, so to speak, and all that is just exactly what you need, even if it doesn't seem like what you need at the time, because, you know, I mean, nobody wants to do a thing they don't want to do. but once you actually dive in and you're done, it's like, okay, I'm actually glad I did that type of deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Practice, I think, is like the thing that comes to mind most with that. It's like every time I practice and get better, I'm like, oh, that's awesome. Whenever I think about practicing, I'm like, this sounds terrible. I don't want to do this.
Ooh, maybe I should take a page out of your book. I haven't intentionally practiced much in quite a while. I play a lot, but I haven't like intentionally sat down.
I'm the same way. I maybe the last time I intentionally practiced was when I was trying to get a drum part down or a guitar part for like a specific lead line or something. But I'm very bad at intentionally practicing. So I should take a page out of my own book, to be honest. Let's say that.
I think most musicians could probably say the same thing, if I'm being totally honest.
Yeah, like, I knew one kid in high school who was to, like, practice 4 to 5 hours a day after school. And, like, that's rare. Like, I think most people could definitely spend more time. I just don't know what to practice. I think that's my biggest thing. Is like, I never know what to practice. I never took guitar lessons, so I never had, like, a basis of how to get better. It was just mostly learning parts and kind of like trying to fit in.
I did take some lessons for a little while, and I will say, I mean, obviously this depends on the teacher and the student and the relationship between the two and all that stuff. But I will say it really helped me grow kind of exponentially. I didn't take them for very long, and I wasn't the most dedicated at practicing and whatever, but I did get a lot out of the lessons that I took. And it definitely improved me as a player. So, I mean, and this was after I'd been playing for quite a while before I ever took lessons. So if you have the free time and the ability, I would definitely suggest, you know, giving a few different instructors a try. And it sounds kind of boring. It really does. To me, it sounds really boring. But what I actually gleaned out of all that stuff is definitely made me a better player overall.
Yeah, and I think for me, it wouldn't be boring if I felt like I could see the progress or feel the progress. If I was just taking lessons and like, I was like, oh, this is stuff I can already do, I think I would feel very, like I wouldn't want to do it. But like if I was like, oh, like this is stuff I want to do and I can't yet, and I know how to get there now, I feel like I would be excited about that. And I've looked into it a couple times. I think, yeah, just the time and having the extra income to do that as a adult nowadays sometimes is, you got to make it a priority.
That's just the thing. If you don't make it a priority, I'm a prime example of this. If you don't make it a priority, it'll totally fall by the wayside. But I guess that goes along with really anything that's worth doing. If you don't put your head down and start doing it, then it's just going to go away. So, you know, obviously you can't do everything in life, but things like this that tend to be a priority, maybe now's the time. Who knows? It's just a thought.
Not bad. Not bad.
Well, we've been talking for quite a while now, and I haven't given you the I got a couple more final questions, and I don't know if have anything you'd like to tell the people before we sign off here.
Only thing I can think of is putting in that plug for Sinusoid Cables, man. Some awesome stuff. They just picked up. I'm actually no longer there with all this hospital
stuff. Oh, you're
not.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, and so I actually haven't been in for a little bit, but I just saw they picked up a couple new German-made cables that look super awesome. All the new Squatch stuff, so Squatch design, the pedal boards and straps and hats and awesome stuff there. If you need anything, definitely put that plug in for Sinusoid stuff. It, as somebody who never spent money on like what I thought was the accessory inside stuff, like the cables, I would you know, buy like the $10 cable off Amazon. As somebody who was that person and then started working at Sinusoid, like, it's worth it. I'll 100% say it. Like, as somebody who hates spending lots of money on stuff, it is. So I'll just put that out there as a convert of high quality, good stuff that's going to last.
There you go. I like it. And you guys, all you listeners know that Sinusoid's been supporting the show for a very long time, and it was really nice to talk to John and hear his story, and hopefully everybody got something out of it. But please, Sinusoid's been supporting us for a long time, and they really do make the best stuff in the business. So go check them out for sure. And with that, I will slide into my final questions, and one of them being, what is your favorite boss pedal?
Favorite boss pedal? I think I gotta go with the DD20. I'm trying to think of what else out there, maybe. Or like an RV5 or RV6. Like that mod setting on an RV5.
It's really nice.
It's just like, as somebody with a big sky, like, I'm still like, man, it'd be nice to just have an RV5 at the end just for that mod setting. So one of those two, the DD20, the way it's set up, it offers some really fun ways to mess with the settings. So that's always really fun to play around with. But yeah, I'd have to say one of those two. I don't know off the top of my head which I'd rather have. Probably the DD20.
All right. DD20, final answer?
I think, yeah, I'll have to go DD20. Final answer.
I'll give it. That's a good, solid choice. The DD20 is a classic for a reason, or for many reasons, yeah. I should say. All right, final question. And this is the big one. What kind of pizza do you like?
Oh, man. This is actually something I've been thinking about a lot, because I see so many pizza pictures in the Facebook group. and I, as somebody who's like a newer listener, I don't really understand it, but it makes me think about pizza a lot. There is a place in Olympia, Washington and Lacey, called, what's the name of this place? It's like an Italian place.
Casa Mia. I'm hitting the Google machine as fast as I can. Oh, sorry, what?
Casa Mia.
Okay.
Which almost sounds Hispanic, but let me double check. That's Casa Mia Olympia. Anyway, there is a pizza there. I actually have like two or three answers, and they're all Olympia based places. So if you're ever driving through Olympia on I-5 in Washington, and you want a good pizza, I've got lots of good places.
Okay.
Casa Mia has it's a three cheese chicken pizza. And I'm one of those guys that loves a good white sauce pizza. Chicken with three cheeses. So it's like apparently won awards. It's a gorgonzola parmesan sauce, chicken, onions, red peppers, black olives, basil, finished with a balsamic vinaigrette like thing. And it is, as somebody who's not super into fancy, like high-end food, that sounds way fancier than something I would like, I feel like, but it is amazing.
Sounds
so
really
if you're
good.
Ever, yeah, it, the gorgonzola parmesan sauce like is another level. And then there's another place in Olympia area called Brewery City Pizza. And they have a chicken bacon ranch pizza. And the thing I love about what they do that's different than anywhere I've ever been is it's a ranch sauce, chicken and bacon, cheese. They cook the pizza. And then after they cook the pizza, they put fresh shredded lettuce and tomatoes on top. So as long as you eat the pizza fresh and it hasn't been sitting out, you get the super good hot chicken bacon ranch. But then you also get like the cool crisp lettuce and tomato on top. Oh my gosh. It is a, and I've never seen anywhere else put cold ingredients on the pizza after it's cooked. And it was just like,
I could see that being really good.
It's amazing. It's crazy. I had a buddy who worked there in high school, and so I've eaten a lot of that pizza, and it just, it never gets old. So I guess, yeah, two different white sauce pizzas. Red sauce pizzas, I feel like red pizza sauce is so different across the board that sometimes it's like too spicy, or sometimes it's super bland, that I sometimes just don't want to deal with red sauce pizzas. So
there's nothing worse than biting into a pizza. It's like, oh, that pizza looks good. Here we go. I'm so hungry. And you bite into a like a red sauce pizza that has not that great of sauce. It's so disappointing. It's like, what is this?
Yeah. And I feel like, I mean, melted cheese is always going to be good. Like, pepperoni is really hard to get wrong. I feel like the sauce is the biggest make or break on a pizza for me. Like, toppings, majority of the time, I'm fine with whatever's on there. Not a big Italian sausage. Like, I feel like it's too spiced sometimes. But most of the time, I'm fine with that. There's not on top of pizza. But the sauce, like, the sauce changes a pizza. Papa Murphy's. This is a hack for everybody. If you ever are a Papa Murphy's fan, get the Chicago-style deep dish pizza with white sauce instead of the red sauce.
Really?
So good. Oh, my gosh. So good. Because they have, like, the white sauce chicken deep dish at Papa Murphy's. But if you get the white sauce on the Chicago style, the white sauce with the meat, like instead of, because usually white sauce is more of a chicken, you mix it with the chicken or the, not the like pepperonis and stuff, but man, the white sauce with like all the meat in that pizza, so good.
I'm gonna have to try that. I am quite a fan of Papa Murphy's. I feel like it's really difficult pizza to beat for the price. Like, it's really
hard. Oh, I think chain-wise, it's probably my favorite chain pizza.
Definitely.
Easy. And I mean, the extra time, you know, obviously is annoying. But I think out of any chain pizza, I'd rather have Papa Murphy's. So, yeah, I love
Papa Murphy's. Do you have access to a pellet grill of some sort? Like a Traeger or something like it?
I think the couple me and my wife live with have a smoke. It's a smoker. I don't know if it's a pellet.
Well, if it's anything like a Traeger style smoker, do yourself a favor and slide a Papa Murphy's pizza on there one of these days.
Smoke it up. All right.
Yeah. You slide it on there. You let it smoke on the tray for like on the lowest setting for like 20 minutes or so, and then turn it up, cook it normal, like at the 425, I think it is.
Yeah.
Until it's almost done, and then slide it off the tray onto the Traeger, directly onto the Traeger. Oh. Let it finish for a couple minutes right there.
Hit that bottom.
It is so good. Like, it's a whole new level of Papa Murphy's pizza. It's kind of insane.
That sounds, any specific, like pellet flavor or anything? I feel like there's so many different like smoke flavors that you could go with.
I tend to just use Cascade Alder for everything because it's fairly neutral, and then I don't have to think about it. So like, I use that for ribs. I use it for, you know, briskets, pizzas, burgers. I pretty much just always use Alder just because it's readily available to me and it's fairly neutral. Gotcha. So that's what I go with.
Nice. Oh, I'm definitely going to have to try that.
Okay. we're giving out life hacks left and right over here. Papa Murphy's based life hacks, though.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Pizza based. All right, hacks, John, are the best.
Well, thank you so much for coming on. It was really nice to talk to you and get to know you a little bit better.
Thanks for having me. It's been awesome. So
yep, Well, I think we've been at it for quite a while now, so I think I'll sign off as long as that's okay with you.
Alrighty, yep, all good.
Okay. All right, folks, for John, this is Blake, and as always, folks, good luck and good tones. All right, I'm not going to do too much on the back end of this one. Thank you for tuning in and listening to that episode. If you can, please check out that GoFundMe. It's, again, right there in the show notes, the link's right there, and anything you can do would be massively, massively appreciated by the family. I know that much for a fact. And yeah, I'm not really sure what else to say here, but I hope that gave you a good peek into what type of person John was and how he impacted his friends, his family, and those he worked with. So much love to his family. And man, I don't know what else to say. This is a rough one. So I guess on that note, I will talk to you all next week. Thank you.